would, be turning to the Old Testament book of Exodus. We'll begin there in just a moment as we look at some things that relate, at least initially in our lesson, to Moses' life particularly. As I said a little earlier, we have a number of guests with us. We're very glad to have you. Some of you are here to pick up your kids. We don't particularly like that. We like for you to leave them with us. But because school is about over, you've come to try to help them get back home, and so we'll let you borrow them for a while, but we hope that you'll let us have them back. But we've been a good year. We appreciate our college population very much. They are a major factor in what we try to do here, and they are an encouragement, inspiration to us, and we really appreciate having them, and we want those of you who are parents to know that as well. So we look forward to having them back. And for those who may not be returning, we look forward to even better things from you. And I'm going to talk a little bit about that as we get into our lesson a little later in the lesson this morning. When you think of the book of Exodus, most of us think about Moses because of the Exodus. Moses' life is really easily understood in terms of shaping it into three sections. He lived 120 years. The first 40 years of his life, as we know, he was in Egypt. He was being raised as an Egyptian. The middle 40 years of his life were spent in Midian. He was tending the flock of his father-in-law, Jethro, as Hayden read for us this morning from Exodus, the third chapter. But the last 20 years of his life are the part of his life that we are most familiar with. And we are most familiar with him because it has to do with him taking and helping lead the children of Israel who were in bondage. He was leading them because of God's help, and as a result of God's help, he was leading them out of captivity, out of Egyptian bondage. He was helping them cross the Red Sea. He wanted them, as God wanted them, to go into the promised land, but because of their lack of faith in him, God made them wander in the wilderness. And so most of that last 40 years is referred in Scripture as the wilderness wanderings. And Moses was a part of that. And as we all know, he was not even allowed to go into the promised land because of even sin in his own life. And at the beginning of this last part of his life, he has an exchange with the Lord that is, it's really unique. It's unique because only Moses was asked to do by God what Moses was asked to do. And I want you to look at some of that language with me that's recorded in Exodus, the third chapter. The beginning of that, Moses is tending Jethro's sheep. Jethro is his father-in-law. Zipporah is Jethro's daughter, one of his daughters who is married to Moses. And as Moses leads the sheep back toward the back part of the desert, close to what is called Mount Horeb or Mount Sinai, an angel appears in a burning bush. For those of us who are my age and maybe older, we think of Charlton Heston in the movie The Ten Commandments. We are pretty familiar with that. That's the image that I draw up in my mind when I think about the burning bush. And of course, we know that the bush was actually not burning, but it gave that appearance. And so I want to start reading in, if you would, read with me in verse 4 of this, of chapter 3. So when the Lord saw that he turned aside to look, God called to him from the midst of the bush and said, "Moses, Moses," and he said, "Here I am." And then he said, "Do not draw near this place. Take your sandals off your feet, for the place you stand is holy ground." Moreover, he said, "I am the God of your father, the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, and the God of Jacob." And Moses hid his face, for he was afraid to look upon God. This is an amazing scene. Here's a man who is staring at a bush that is, in essence, burning. And the angel of the Lord talks to him. And in essence, God is going to speak to him. Verse 7 tells us what God said. "And the Lord said, I have surely seen the oppression of my people who are in Egypt and have heard their cry because of their taskmasters, for I know their sorrow. So I have come down to deliver them out of the hand of the Egyptians and to bring them up from that land to a good and large land, to a land flowing with milk and honey, to the place of the Canaanites and the Hittites and the Amorites and the Perizzites and the Hivites and the Jebusites. And now therefore, behold, the cry of the children of Israel has come to me, and I have also seen the oppression with which the Egyptians oppressed them. Come now, therefore, and I will send you to Pharaoh, that you may bring my people, the children of Egypt, or the children of Israel, out of Egypt. God tells Moses why he has appeared to him. And then you all know what happens after this. God says, Moses, here's what I want you to do. I've seen the oppression of my people. I need somebody to lead the people out of Egypt, and you're the one I designated. And so Moses then begins, beginning with verse 11, Moses begins to offer all sorts of excuses. Who am I? Who shall I send? Who shall I say sent me? What if they don't listen to me, Lord? And then his final one is, listen, I'm slow of speech. I'm slow of tongue. What's the issue? And of course, we know with all those excuses, God always responded favorably. And when I say favorably, God always told him, I'm going to solve that issue for you. Let me tell you why this is going to be the way this is. So the question of who am I? I think about me standing before a burning bush and God speaking to me, and when he starts, and my first reaction is, are you want me? To do this? You're talking, God, the God of heaven and earth who made it, you're talking to me, you're telling me to do this. I totally understand Moses' response. And he says, yes, I want you. And then he says, to who shall I say sent me? And I understand that. And so Moses wants God, in essence, to explain himself. How am I going to explain this to the people? I'm going to go to them and they're going to say, who sent you here? And you tell them, the great I am sent you. We could talk a long time about just what that means and just how important that is. But God solved that issue. And he says, what if they don't listen? Now, you know what he said, right? If they don't listen, I'm going to show you, or there are going to be some signs that I'm going to do. And when I do these signs, he even says, I'm going to do these signs, and Pharaoh's heart's going to be hardened. As a matter of fact, he says, I'm going to harden it. And he's not going to do what maybe you think he ought to do. So I'm going to show you what I'm going to do. So to the question of what if they don't listen, God said to Moses, I'll tell you what I'm going to do. This is the way it's going to happen. This is how I'm going to lay it out. And then to the question of I'm slow of speech and I'm slow of tongue. In other words, I can't think too well on my feet. And when I do think about what it is that I want to say, I don't articulate that very well. There's a problem here. You're asking me, Moses, to go do this. I don't think too well, and I can't articulate it if I can think about it. And he says, I'm going to solve your problem. I'm going to send Aaron with you. So when you get to verse 18 of Exodus 4, verse 18 says, so Moses went and returned to Jethro, his father-in-law, and said to him, please let me go and return to my brethren who are in Egypt and see whether they are still alive. And Jethro said to Moses, go in peace. Moses packs up, takes Zipporah, takes Gershom. And what's interesting, chapter 4, verse 20 says, then Moses took his wife and his sons. Up to this point, we really don't have a record except of one son being born, and that's Gershom. But later on, we're told about Eliezer. So between Gershom being born and them leaving, Eliezer is born. And they take off. And what I want us to pay special attention to is how God responded to Moses in the pre-travel stage. I want you to look at that with me. Look at the pre-travel stage. This is verse 8. In verse 10, he says, come now, therefore, I will send you to Pharaoh that you may bring my people, the children of Israel, out of Egypt. And then to all of these things that God says to Moses, and the excuses that Moses makes, God offers him a solution to that. You know, he wanted to know, and God even performed miracles. He said, you know, put your hand in your bosom. And when he did that, he brought it out and it looked like leprosy. He said, put it back in. He brought it back out and it looked new again. And God did all that to help Moses understand, look, I'm going to be with you. All these excuses that you're offering, you don't need to worry about. God is going to help you. Matter of fact, in chapter 4 and verse 14, notice what it says here. After these excuses were made, so the anger of the Lord was kindled against Moses, and he said, is not Aaron the Levite your brother? I know that he can speak well, and look, he's also coming out to meet you. When he sees you, he will be glad in his heart. Now you shall speak to him and put words in his mouth, and I will be your mouth and with his mouth, and I will teach you what you shall do. So shall he be your spokesman to the people, and he himself shall be as a mouth for you, and you shall be as to him as God. And you shall take his rod in your hand, and with which you shall do the signs. Here's what I want you to see. That every time Moses said there's a problem, God said, here's a solution. You're going to offer these issues, and I'm telling you, I'm going to be with you. He said, matter of fact, I'm even telling you, I'm going to show signs, and these signs, I don't know if they call them plagues in the original, but that's what happened. We know them as the 10 plagues. He said, I'm going to do these things, and ultimately Pharaoh is going to understand, and he's going to let my people go. He's going to do that. Let me ask you a question. You ever thought about why God told Moses all those things? You ever thought about why God responded to Moses when Moses kept saying, I can't speak. Who am I? Who am I going to say sent me? All these issues that Moses had. You ever thought about why didn't God just say, I'm taking care of it? He didn't just say, I'm taking care of it. He said, here's how I'm taking care of it. This is the way that I'm going to take care of all of these things. And I think part of why God did that for Moses is this was almost an exhaustive task. You're sending one man to the nation of Egypt and you're asking this one man to say, you got to let all these thousands, hundreds of thousands of people go. I think God knew that Moses would get rattled, that there would be times when Moses was weak, and yet God is telling him ahead of time, my plan is going to work, regardless of whether or not you think it's going to work. Everything that you're going to come up against, I'm going to have a solution. And he tells all of that ahead of time. So if Moses had, and maybe he did, I think it wanes as the story unfolds, but Moses could always say, well, you know, that's what God told me it was going to be like this. God said it's going to be this way. There's a similar thing that happens. I want you to turn to Luke 22 in the New Testament. Turn to Luke 22. A similar thing happens to Peter. And it's similar in the sense that God tells Peter some things that are going to happen when he doesn't have to, okay? But he tells Peter some things. The way Matthew records this, I want you to stay in Luke, but the way Matthew records this is that Peter has this exchange with the Lord before the Lord's about to be arrested and crucified, and the exchange has to do with Peter saying, Lord, whatever happens to you, I'm with you. You know, you may have to worry about your other disciples, but you don't have to worry about me. That's what Matthew records. It's very clear. And yet, we all know what happened. When the crunch time came, Peter caved in. When it came time for Peter to say, yes, I am his, I'm his disciple, he just completely caved in. And he completely disavowed knowing anything about Jesus Christ. Matter of fact, the text tells us that he denied Christ three times, and the text tells us that Christ told him he's going to deny him three times. In Luke's account in Luke 22. Here's what I want you. I want you to read in the beginning of verse 31. Follow this carefully. Luke 22, 31. And the Lord said, Simon, Simon, indeed Satan has asked for you that he may sift you as wheat. But I have prayed for you that your faith should not fail, and when you have returned to me, strengthen your brethren. He said to him, Lord, I'm ready to go with you both to prison and to death. And then he said, I tell you, Peter, the rooster shall not crow this day before you will deny three times that you know me. Did you hear what Jesus said to him in verse 32? Look at it again. Look at verse 32. I have prayed for you that your faith should not fail, and when you have returned to me, strengthen your brethren. Do you catch that? You see what Jesus is saying to Peter? You follow that? He's saying, you're going to deny me, but when you come back to me. Jesus is saying that to Peter. Do you think Peter heard that? Or do you think Peter was thinking, how's he going to? Do you think Peter was thinking, no, what I want to tell you, Lord, is I'll never deny you. I'll die with you. I'll go to prison, wherever. Do you think he was thinking about what he was going to say without listening to what had just been said? Doesn't that happen a lot? We think about how we're going to respond to something. We don't listen to what's being said. Now, I'm not suggesting that necessarily happens, but right here, Jesus is telling Peter, let me tell you about the future. Tell him right here, here's what's going to happen. You're going to deny me, but when you come back, what's going to happen? You're coming back to strengthen your brethren. That's why he came back. Did that happen? Happened Acts 2 on, right? Acts 2, Acts 3, Acts 4, Acts 5. Man, Peter was strong. Peter was a mainstay. When you read the book of Acts, it was Peter who was leading the charge, if you will. Well, that's exactly what Jesus said was going to happen. Jesus told him. Jesus told him, that's what you're going to do before he denied him. He said, when you come back, you're going to strengthen me. Jesus is saying, you will return to me. Jesus could have said nothing and he could have let Peter just find out on his own. He could have just let Moses find out on his own. Go, just go, Moses, just go. Instead, he said, when this happens, this is going to happen. When this happens, this is going to happen. When this happens, this is going to happen. And when this happens, this is going to happen. And ultimately, they're coming out of Egyptian bondage. And they're coming out because I say they're coming out. And he told Moses all that. And he tells Peter, you're coming back to me. Now, here's the question, right? Well, that's good for Moses. It's good for... What about us? And somebody says, well, our situation is not like that. Let me ask you this question. Would you like to look into the future? The answer, I know what the answer is. Yes and no. Well, yeah, and well, no. We'd say, yeah, and we'd find, well, I don't want to know that. We'd say, no, well, yeah, I'd want to know that. There's a yes and no about the idea. Would you like to look into the future? Would you like to know the future? And Moses' circumstances were unique in a very real sense. They're not like ours in the sense that God speaks to us and he says, now, you can offer all these excuses about what I want you to accomplish, but here's how I'm going to solve it. He doesn't do that to us, folks. He doesn't speak to us like he spoke to Moses. He was simply tending sheep when the call came. And I think my response would be what Moses' response was. And I think before I just said, Lord, I'll do whatever you say, I'd say, well, what about this and what about this and what about this and what about this? I'm very sympathetic to Moses. And I've heard a lot of lessons on don't offer excuses to God. And I've heard a lot of lessons on that based upon this text. And I'm not against those lessons. But when I look at what Moses did, that's me. Well, I got this problem with that, or I got this problem with that. And what Moses is told by God is, no, you really don't have any problems. Not as long as you stay with me. Peter denied that he knew Jesus. Yet Jesus told him, you'll be back. And when you come back, you're going to play a significant role in my kingdom's future. We don't have a record of Peter saying to the Lord, would you repeat what you just said? Here I am. I know in my mind I'm about to just abandon you altogether. But what did you just say about when I return? What did you just say? I'm going to strengthen the brethren. What? He didn't. We don't know that he said that, but he certainly found that out. And here's the point that I want to make to you this morning. Moses and Peter were both dealing with transitions. That's the point that I want to make to you. They were both, think about this. They were both dealing with life changes that were dramatic. Moses was told, you're going to leave everything you've known for the past 40 years. You're going to leave it. You're going to leave all the comforts of Midian. You're going to leave all these sheep that you know, you've been a good shepherd, but I want you to leave that. And now I want you to go rescue all these folks in a hostile situation. I want you to go rescue those people. He's about to transition from something very comfortable to something very uncomfortable. Peter was going to have to transition back and forth to totally denying the Lord. And my guess is having to think about that constantly. Can you imagine? Matter of fact, the text tells us he wept. My guess is Peter did more than that. My guess is he just wept. My guess is until the resurrection and until he knew that the Lord, he was just devastated by what he had done. But may I practically tell you this? This is why I want to present this lesson this morning. There's a lot of people here in this audience who are in transition. And I've been thinking about that for some time. There have been times in my life when I've been in transition. We've all dealt with some level of transition. We go to school. We start school. We transition into school, into a school system. And we spend a little while there and we transition into what is a little higher level of school, into what back when I was in it, it called it junior high school. I think they call it middle school now. It'll probably change next year. And so there's a transition to that. You're starting to identify yourself in terms of dealing with people in a different kind of way. And then you finish that and you transition into high school. And that's a whole other issue sometimes. And then we transition into college possibly, and we transition into the workforce, and we transition out of school and to do different things. And along the way, we transition into different roles and relationships, and we change jobs. And then we got some folks here in this audience that not long ago retired and just said, I'm done with it. Not, you didn't say that, but you transitioned. And you know, that's a hard transition. I don't care what you've done to transition from saying, oh, today, I don't have to go to work. I don't have to get up at a certain time. I don't have to do any of that anymore. I'm done with that. And from what I can tell, you're pretty pleased about that. I think that'd be a pretty good thing. But it's a transition. There are people in this audience today who are dealing with aging. Some of you are dealing with it directly because it's affecting you. Now we're all aging. But the issues that relate to that are more aware for some of us today than for others. Some of us are dealing with it directly and some of us are dealing with it indirectly. Some of it's affecting us personally or it's affecting a member of our family and we're having to deal with that. That's a transition. That's a change from the way it's been. And some of you are facing not only complex circumstances, but difficult circumstances. Those are difficult circumstances because those are transitions. And at some point, we face death. We face it head on. It's a transition. And the part of the difficulty, it seems to me, and while I've not faced it, nor have any of you, but part of the difficulty, it seems to me, is that there's a lot of that's unknown. It just is. You know, if we're a Christian, we all approach it, and I think we should with some level of calmness. But the fact that it's an unknown is it's disheartening. It's disheartening to me. I don't know what it's going to be like. But I want you to think about those transitions. I think she'll be okay with me doing this. I'll talk about Anna for just a minute. She's rolling her eyes at me right now going, I can't believe you're doing this. You know, she shows up a few years ago in Wyoming from Brazil. She'd gone to community college in Wyoming. One essence is to play volleyball, but to get an education, to begin a higher education. And so she transitions from a place, I hadn't been to Brazil, but I've been to Wyoming. And Wyoming ain't Brazil. If you don't believe me, ask her. But that's a transition. And I've asked her, how was that? You know what? It was okay. Was it different? Yeah, oh yeah. And then she shows up here. Not here, but shows up at UNA. In part, primarily because she has some ability to play volleyball. That's waning pretty quickly. Just kidding. But she shows up here. And she begins to meet some of us. And she begins to build a friendship with us and us her. And she's transitioning to a different phase of her life. And now she has to think about other transitions. She's graduating. What started a few years ago in Brazil is now a graduation from a university in the United States, and she has to find a job. And she's thinking about her life and the future of her life. And now she's doing that in part, I think, and fundamentally because she has faith. And she and I have those conversations. But all that's hard. What does she do? What do the rest of you do? What do all of us do? Well, her circumstances aren't my circumstances, but I've had things that happen to me that are similar, and all of us are in some transition phase. I'll tell you what I think Moses learned and what Peter learned, and I think what he wants us to learn is that as I'm using you, and while now we may not know exactly how that works, and I don't believe we can know. You've heard me talk about providence before. I think the best thing we would do with providence is just accept the fact that it happens, but leave it alone because we don't know how. But the fact of the matter is, we know God is working in our lives and He's for us and He wants to help His own. That's exactly what He told Moses. I'm going to be with you. Now, He told Moses, here's how that's going to happen. When He says this, when you say this, He's going to react this way. He's not going to do this. He will do this. He told Moses. So Moses began to understand that. Peter was told, you're going to come back and you're going to help me. You're going to strengthen the brethren. I don't know whether he understood it then or not, but he was told that. He hadn't said all that to me. The Lord hadn't spoken to me and said, Kenny, you're going to grow up, and you're going to go to school in Florida, and you're going to work down there for a long time, and you're going to move to Alabama, and you're going to work there for a while. Then who knows what's going to happen? He's not said that to me. Not directly. But what he said to me is what you need to learn from Moses and what you need to learn from Peter is everything's going to be okay. I think that's the lesson. I think the lesson is God is faithful. I think that's what he's trying to help Moses understand. God, I'm going to be faithful to you. You be faithful to me, I'm going to be faithful to you. I will never leave you nor forsake you. You're going to make all these transitions in your life, and yet no matter what you do, I'm with you. I'm not going to leave you. I'm never going to forsake you, the Hebrew writer tells us. And trusting God takes great faith. I do not know about my future. I don't know about your future. I don't know about the transitions that Anna or anybody else here is going to make. I don't know about all of that, but I know that we have to trust God. And trusting God takes great faith. Transitioning into new phases takes faith and trust and confidence and patience. And us believing that God will always be true. So whatever your circumstances, whatever your wherever you are in life, whatever your transitions are, you have to believe and honor God with your life and understand that He will help you. He'll always be true. And I don't need to see or know the future to know that God will work everything out in my life. That's what I believe. But that's what I believe based upon stories like I see of Moses and stories like I read about Peter and stories like I read even about a man named Thomas. Because in John 20 and verse 29, Jesus' words to Thomas after Thomas said, I need to see it, Lord. I need to see that you're back from the dead. And the Lord showed him. And then the Lord said to Thomas, blessed are those who have not seen and yet they believe. I'll tell you. Not seeing and believing, that takes faith. It doesn't take faith. If God spoke to us and said, now when you make this transition, when you leave college and you go out into the workforce and you're trying to figure out where you're going to live, this is what I want you to do, this is where I want you to go, and this is where I want you to work, and I want you to stay this long. If God did that, that wouldn't take any faith. That wouldn't take faith. Not the same kind of level that it does for us, because he's telling us, I am going to be with you. But the essence of what he does is he says, I am going to be with you. And the fact that you believe that and you have that kind of faith shows me how much you trust me. Well, I want to read three verses as I close this lesson. From 1 Peter 1. Let me ask you to take your Bible and turn there if you would. 1 Peter 1. And so before I read this, let me just make the point. The point of the lesson today is, as you're making these transitions in your life, I don't care what they are, you've got to know God's with you. You have to believe that. You have to have confidence in that, trust in that, and always do what you do based upon the fact that you know he's willing and wanting and is able to help you. This is 1 Peter 1, beginning in verse 6. In this you greatly rejoice, though now for a little while, if need be, you have been grieved by various trials, that the genuineness of your faith, being much more precious than gold that perishes, though it is tested by fire, may be found to praise, honor, and glory at the revelation of Jesus Christ. You see all that? The genuineness of your faith. That's what he's looking for. Even in the midst of all this uncertainty and all this transition, he's looking for the genuineness of your faith. And then verse 8 says, whom having not seen, you love. Though now you do not see him, yet believing, you rejoice with joy inexpressible and full of glory, receiving the end of your faith, the salvation of your souls. There's a lot to be said, folks, for people who trust in God and they've never seen him. Now that doesn't mean you have a blind faith. That doesn't mean that you just, well, I think I'll believe in God. That'll be my life's aim, and that's my purpose, and that's my worldview. I'm just going to pick that. That's not what he's saying. There's a reason why we believe what we do. There's a reason why we believe who we believe. There's a reason why we believe what we do, even though we haven't seen Jesus. No, we haven't seen God. There's a reason why we do that. And what Peter says is, your genuine faith is going to lead you to having this joy that he says is inexpressible. That's how we make these transitions. That's how we maintain our faith in all these transitions. He's not leading us in terms of saying, you go here and you go here and you go. But he's saying, you trust me, you make the decision, you trust me, and it's all going to work out for your ultimate benefit, for the salvation of your souls, I think. Isn't that a great way to live life? And even though, you know, I know, I'm not where some of you in this audience are. There's some of you in this audience who are. You're very concerned about the next phase of your life. I get it. All of us are, to some degree or another. But the uncertainty creates more uncertainty and concern. But here's what I'm saying to you. Just trust. Just trust in God. Have a genuine faith. Trust in him. And in each of these transitions, whatever phase you are in life, just trust him and keep following him and keep doing what he asks you to do, and he'll always be with you. That's what he said he would do. So don't be anxious any more than is natural. You know, all these transitions make us anxious. I get it. I've been through transitions in my life where I was anxious, but I to the best of my ability, I trusted in God, and Beth trusted in God, and we've come this far, I think, in part because we have trusted in God, because that's what He's asking us to do, and that's what He asked all of us to do. So I want you to take some comfort this morning in the fact that even though your life may be in transition, you just trust in Him, and you follow Him, and you commit to Him, and everything's going to be well with you. That's what He said to Moses. That's what He said to Peter. And that's what He says to us. May God help us to that end. If you're here this morning and you need to begin that walk with God, we want to help you. I probably say this more than you want me to, but I can't do anything for you. But I can point you to the one who can solve all your spiritual problems. They can solve the sin problem in your life. And I would point you to Him today. If you would come to Jesus, let us help you by making that known as we stand and as we sing.